Today is March the 20th, 1885. It's about 8:31 or 32. In attendance today, we have Representatives Herman, Cato, Thompson, Miller, Wallace, and Schultz. We have three bills before us today. The first one we're going to take up is going to be HCR 8. We're not on until 9 o'clock. And we will be going to a teleconference at 9 o'clock for the mental health trust lands. If I may, at this time, I would just like to turn the chair over to Representative Herman and all. Since this is my legislation here, I'll testify. Okay, thank you. This is a resolution just simply requesting that the governor and begin, and the state legislature, that we encourage the governor to pursue the establishment of a gas pipeline from Prudhoe Bay down to Fairbanks, and to do everything they possibly can to initiate that and get it going. And then whatever spin-offs happen as a result of it, if it goes to Tidewater or if it goes the other way. You know, but I do believe that we need to try to get something and try to give a direction as far as the legislature is concerned, saying that we are interested in seeing that a gas line is established.
I'm on 29 where it talks about other energy proposals. Are you saying that this should take precedence over Mississippi?
No. If in fact it proves that that the gas generation of electricity is more economical or more feasible than Susitna, certainly.
Oh, I was just going to mention the on line 23 through 25. Eventually passed near Fairbanks if the North Slope gas is through Tidewater or through Canada, the continental United States. Hoping that we can keep it in Alaska, that I'm very definitely in favor of Tidewater.
Sure.
And also a little bit, have a little personal interest there, the nearest Tidewater, of course, being Valdez.
The original bill that I introduced did not say that. And it was on the Oil and Gas Committee, and the Oil and Gas Committee are the ones that added that language, or to Canada, the continental United States, which I told them I had no problem. Whichever one proves to be the most economical and wherever the most benefits can be derived for Alaskans, and that's the route that we should go.
On line 19, where it talks about the rail belt, Commissioner Wanneke, Department of Natural Resources, sent Senator Bennett a letter saying that gas and hook inlet should meet South Central needs well into the middle 1990s and beyond. I wonder how this one would go.
Well, I think it would probably, if it's going to have an impact, it would probably have the impact on the South Central area, but I'm talking about the Fairbanks, and this is simply something. If it does, if there is enough gas in the area that Esther is talking about, still we get that gas line down there. There's a lot of spin-off industries that may be able to take place in the Fairbanks area, providing jobs, etc. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. On line 2 of the second page, you talk about exposed to other interior communities. What other interior communities?
Well, I believe that whatever studies might indicate, I just right off the top of my head, I can think of one possible, and that would be Delta. And I think of that because of the ag and the grain and the things of that nature. But you may have some of the northern communities, and if it's viable to run a small diameter gas line to some of the communities that where the gas line bypasses, there may be a possibility to spur off. For example, Stevens Village. You know, it may be feasible to run a small diameter gas line off of that to supply heat and things for the homes of that village and other villages that go by.
May I continue? On line 5, second page, cooperate with the administration to remove political barriers. I wonder what political barriers have you identified?
No, that has been changed.
Okay.
any barriers.
That is, remove any barriers. The word political was removed, and there was some discussion on that. So, yeah.
What barriers then have you identified?
Well, you know, some of the very things that we've talked about in here on the on the right of way part of it, there may be some problems in getting the permitting, the permits, that kind of thing. So there are some barriers. There may be, you know, there's going to be the people that wanted to go to Tidewater, those who wanted to go to Canada. You know, there's all kinds of those barriers that have to be overcome. And
somebody's being me.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Perlman is chairing.
Madam Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning, Representative
Miller. Madam Chairman, if there's no further discussion, I think the thing is pretty straightforward. I'd like to move it out of committee with individual recommendations.
Object for just to discuss and make any amendments to it?
No. No amendments.
Okay, I remove my objection.
Okay, there is a motion before the committee to move with individual recommendations or any objections. We have a teleconference that's going to start at 9 o'clock, and we'll take up HB 273. And this, we have the prime sponsor here with us, which is Representative Duncan, or at least I thought it was. Oh, there he is. Right. And this is an act related to the equilateral rights of federal lode mining claims. And I believe that we have quite a few people here to testify on this legislation. We have 20 minutes and then the teleconference starts. I have been briefed on this a little bit, and I think it's pretty straightforward. And I'll just turn it over to you, Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make my comments very short. I didn't realize you had a teleconference. There are some others who may want to testify. However, they may just want to answer questions also. But I do appreciate you bringing the bill up in a timely manner. The purpose of the proposed legislation is to clarify the law in Alaska and confirm that owners of federal lode mining claims located prior to statehood are entitled to extralateral rights under shorelands, tidelands, and submerged lands. The doctrine of extralateral rights, as I understand it, originated under the Federal Mining Law of 1872 and provides that the owner of a federal lode mining claim is entitled to follow a vein downward outside the vertical boundaries of his claim if the top of the vein is within his claim. The doctrine only relates to the title to the minerals contained in a specific vein, and it does not entitle the owner to any surface use outside his claim, nor does it relieve the owner of the claim from obtaining all necessary permits that are required by law. That, very, very briefly, is the legislation, and as I stated, the purpose of it is to clarify the law in Alaska and confirm that owners of the federal lode mining claims located prior to statehood are entitled to these rights. The principal areas in the state which will probably be affected by the legislation are Southeast and Prince William Sound, although the legislation could have some possible impact on the interior and other regions where veins may trend in their bodies of navigable water. Mr. Chairman, I know that my staff has been working with yours and on some possible amendments, and I see a proposed committee substitute has been drafted. I think you've looked at it. The committee substitute makes several changes. The proposed committee substitute, if you were to adopt it, changes which I agree with. It provides for an effective date, an immediate effective date, which I think is important in this legislation. Beginning on line 11, it changes the structure of the sentence, just reworks a sentence that was in the original bill and changes it somewhat in the committee substitute to make it more grammatically proper and adds the words are confirmed and granted to, and then later on also adds is granted in the area of the bill. So the changes I think are important. I don't think they change the intent of the legislation at all or do cause any difficulty with it, and I do support the proposed committee substitute.
At this time, so we have something before us, I would entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 273.
Any objections? Okay, committee substitute for House Bill 273 is before us. Any questions of Representative Duncan? Representative Herman.
Representative Duncan.
Excuse me, just a second. I wanted to acknowledge the presence of Representative Jenkins Pierce's son for the record.
Who could I ask if any of these, you know, federal mines would be in my district? Do you have someone in the audience?
I don't have that information. I'm not sure if anyone here can answer that question or not. The question is whether there are any of these in Representative Herman's district. Which is your district?
District 26,
Bristol Bay. Perhaps they can come
Chairman, up. I don't believe that this really applies to hard rock load mining and not any placer mining. I don't know if there's any load mines that I know of up in the Bristol Bay area.
I'm not aware of any unless there's a potential for loaded someplace like the mine or something like that.
Yeah. I don't think so.
No questions?
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay, the first person we have testify, or the next person, is Harris Saxon.
Mr. Chairman, I might let Bob Maynard of the AG's office, he's got an appointment he has to run off to take my place, if it would be all right.
Fine with me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harris. Members of the committee, my name is, for the record, my name is Robert Maynard. I'm Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. We have looked into this matter. There is a question as to whether or not the rights, the extra hour rights to submerged lands to follow the vein down outside of the original claim, whether or not that those rights are presently with the owners of the load claims before 1959 or not. There's one case back in 1915 with the Treadwell, which indicates that they do have those rights already, and so what this legislation would be doing, if that case was correct, would be confirming that case. However, there is other lines of authority, not directly on point, which raise some question in people's mind. So in case those lines of authority are correct, this legislation would grant the extralateral rights to those things. We see no constitutional or statehood act problems with the legislature doing this particular act. And if there's any questions, I'll be pleased to answer them.
Representative Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Maynard, can you explain the difference between January 3rd, 1959, and do load claims located after that date have any extra lateral rights?
That's basically a statehood act problem. That's a date of statehood. And federal claims that were located on lands within the state of Alaska prior to statehood are taken outside of the state's right, the state's land claim. For example, if you had a location on any land which the state subsequently selected as its own land, that location is still under the ambit of federal law. And that's just the cutoff date for federal rights.
Representative Herman.
Yeah, I believe this legislation is directed at Juneau. Juneau is in the process of developing their coastal zone management plan. How does this fit in with that? Is there any connection with
to my knowledge, there is no conflict with coastal zone management. All necessary permits for activities on federal lands or non-federal lands would not be affected. This would simply say, you know, that it gives title, not the right to mine there without any sort of, you know, avoiding any law that would otherwise apply.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Harris, you want to?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harris Saxon. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Ely, Guest & Rudd in Anchorage, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Barrick Resources Corporation in support of House Bill 273. Barrick is a Canadian mining company that owns several operating gold mines in Canada and the United States, including an interest in one in Alaska, Valdez Creek. They own an interest in the placer deposit up there that produced approximately 20,000 ounces of gold last year. About a year ago, Barrick entered into two mining leases in the Juneau area with the city and borough of Juneau and the Light Company. The two mining leases covered the old AJ mine and the Treadwell mine, and they were entered into for the purpose of reevaluating these mines to see if either one or both could be reopened. The Treadwell mine is a prime example of a project which would be substantially helped by the legislation you now have before you. The four deposits of the Treadwell, as you probably know, dip underneath the Gastineau Channel. That's what caused the Treadwell to shut down in 1917 when it was flooded. During the last 10 to 15 years of the operations of the Treadwell, the ore was essentially mined all underneath the channel. At that time, I believe the Treadwell was the largest producing gold mine in the world. The people who were operating the Treadwell at that time clearly believed they had the rights to follow their vein-type structure underneath the channel. As Bob Maynard mentioned, there's only one case on this issue. It is a case out of Alaska that concerned the Treadwell mine, but it's an old case and it isn't very good precedent, and that because of that, we are somewhat concerned about the security or validity of the title to continue to follow this vein underneath the submerged lands. I think the law is in our favor, it's just not in our favor enough, is the way we look at it. Barrick has lease obligations to the city and the light company to spend approximately $500,000 by the end of 85, including the negotiation costs. It would probably be closer to $750,000. And as the years go on, they have similar and increasing obligations to try to develop these old mines. If, in fact, things look promising, it will take in the tens of millions of dollars to thoroughly analyze these old mines and do a feasibility study, and if one or the other is decided, if it is decided they are economic to reopen, you're talking about a cost of between $100 and $200 million to bring one of the mines online. The effect of this law, as people have said, would be to clarify the rights of the landowner, in this case the city, and the light company, and us as lessees, and allow us to feel comfortable and go forward with these substantial investments. So we strongly urge you to confirm our rights and approve this legislation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. JP.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have nothing to add to what has been already said.
You need to have your name.
Excuse me. My name is JP Tangen. I am here on behalf of Alaska Electric Light and Power Company, which is one of the property owners of the properties previously described. As I started to say, I have nothing further to add. I simply wanted to be available to the committee in case there were any questions that I could answer, or to otherwise make it clear that the property owner supports this legislation as well.
Yeah, we have quite a few more with us. Thank you. Ned,
Mr. Chairman, I didn't have anything to say, just here to answer questions.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I drafted the legislation. Nothing more to add.
Okay. Scott Heilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Heilman, Executive Director of the Alaska Environmental Lobby. As you've heard today, there's some question whether the state currently has extralateral rights to the tidal submersion shorelands we're talking about today. If the state does have those rights, then I think this legislation is unnecessary. If the state does not have those rights, if the state does have those rights, this could be settled in court, then this bill, House Bill 273, would be basically giving those rights to someone else. What does the state receive in exchange for giving up those rights? Under current state mining laws, the state would receive nothing. Section 6I of the Statehood Act compels the state to lease its mineral lands. Yet the state has not adopted a leasing system with rents and royalties, and is currently in court trying to explain why it is not following the Statehood Act. The legislation in front of you is special interest legislation. If this bill were passed, a category of legal rights would be given up, and the state would receive nothing in exchange. The environmental lobby opposes this bill and will continue to oppose such special interest legislation until the state receives a fair share for its resources. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I may, I'd just like to pose a question. Don't you think that the economic benefits will be derived from the opening of the mine and the employment of those people and the contribution that they'll make to the economic base of Juneau isn't a contribution towards state?
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that there's sort of two questions. One is we could look at the economics of this mine in Juneau opening up, and I believe maybe you could make that argument. I guess what I'm trying to make the objection is that we're giving up a broad category of rights without really for one mine, which I may or may not have objections to looking at it specifically, and it sounds okay to me. But we're giving up that broad category of rights without really thinking or talking about what other situations might apply around the state.
Representative Sun.
Yeah, I just want to point, the fact here is that whether the state has the rights in the first place, and I don't personally think they do, but and point to your special interest litigation or issue, Scott, that that issue comes up time and again, and I don't know if Bob's still here to testify on that, but this really is not what would be classified as special interest legislation because of the drafting. It applies to all of the submerged lands throughout the state, not just the submerged lands in Gastineau Channel, which may be a different type of problem. So I don't think that's, there may be other problems with it, but I don't think that's one of the problems. Just because a law that applies statewide only seems to affect one person that we can think of right now doesn't make it special interest.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out in general that from the environmental community's perspective, we believe that mine development should go ahead when the state receives a fair share of, for its resources, rents and royalties, or a tax on gold. Thank you, sir.
Additional questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. It's amazing. We went through every one. That you want to have any questions on the legislation? Representative Wallace.
Yes. I wonder if we can call somebody from the Department of Natural Resources, Ned Farquhar.
Mr. Chairman, Ned Farquhar from the Department of Natural Resources.
Where in the interior would there be low mud in District 24?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know where there's lode mining around the state, but there probably are federal lode claims through Interior. JP, do you have any idea?
Don't know that District 24 well enough to answer the question off the top of my head, but in the Fairbanks area especially, as an example, there's likely to be potential for some lode claims which might qualify. Bear in mind that we're only talking about claims that were located prior to statehood, and so therefore we're basically talking about old claims, and we have to look at mining districts which were created and established and actually worked prior to statehood.
That means, Mr. Chairman, obviously, that we'd be looking at historical mining areas and probably would exclude placer claims that are coming throughout the interior.
It clearly does exclude placer.
Yeah.
Representative
Chairman, Representative Wallace, perhaps just to clarify this statute here, the extra lateral rights already are in existence to any lode claim that is on land, so to speak. Any lode claim that's there, this doesn't do anything to a land base. And the only way I could see it would affect anything in District 24 is if that lode claim vein perhaps went under a navigable body of water, which would be a large lake or river system. This may apply to it. I believe those people already have those extra lateral rights anyway. But this is basically to clarify whether those rights exist on a saltwater or on a coastal area. I know you have the coastal area in Cook Inlet, but I'm not sure there's any load claiming over there.
Representative Wallace, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this involve diverting a river?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would.
Mr. Chairman, if I get all the other permits and rights to do anything on the land are all subject to all the existing land uses. This is does nothing to do with permits or river diversion or water quality or anything. It's just if you, under the Statehood Act, if you take a piece of land like this table and you own the property like this piece of paper, you own it straight down. And if the mining claim comes up over here and the apex of the vein sticks out over here, under the extra lateral right theory, if this vein goes down and somewhere under this table it ends up under your property, under the federal mining law, the miner has the right to continue this right down to Representative Thompson's knee. And, and under the statehood law, when he hits the plane where this property goes straight down, he has to stop. And if he wants to continue, make a deal with the state guy who owns the land. So under the existing federal claim, if you made the claim prior to 59 or in statehood, the state selects the land, they take it subject to the existing right, which is the right to follow the vein. The question that came up is, what if that vein goes under submerged land? Can they follow the vein or can't they? Well, the 1901 case says you can, but there is kind of a little question there. And before you put $100 million into a deal, you want to make sure that that's what happens. And that's what this legislation does. It says if you have a claim under the 1915 or federal law before statehood, and you got an apex sticking out of the ground over here, and you follow that vein that goes under the water, by passing this law, we are confirming that they, in fact, can do that. And that's all this statute does. And you can mine down to Representative Thompson's kneecap.
Soaking wet.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a motion to...
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass out CS for House Bill number 273 with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. House Bill 273 is passed from resources with individual recommendations. Okay. Okay, they need 5 minutes to get set up for the teleconferencing on this mental health trust plan. What is the pleasure of the committee? You want to just kind of relax around here and go off the record, or would you like to begin discussing this legislation? Okay, we'll just we'll be off the record for 5 minutes.
I always send them.
Okay, we're going to call the resources
really
back to
the
order.
We pay for that.
At this time. We have House Bill 128 before us, an act relating to mental health trust land.
Yeah, we have the mentally ill.
We have several sites. We have Anchorage, Fairbanks. We have in Ketchikan. We have the Gateway Mental Health Center. There are approximately. What,
thank you, Roger.
Is that 50? Or fine. Hoping fine. Okay. Okay. I believe that's 5 persons in Ketchikan, and then we have one person. And Toke that wants to testify. At this time, I would like to ask the sponsor of the legislation to come forth, Representative Pignalberry. You are on teleconference, so you will have to switch your microphone up when you testify.
Okay,
oh, and also Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First, a piece of housekeeping, if you would. The packet we handed out to you, if you would turn to the page number 4, that page actually is number 2. If you just renumber that page, number 2, and then the preceding page says 3, and you should renumber that page, number 1.
This is a mental health test.
And then the preceding page is unnumbered. That is page 4, and the preceding page is page number 3. So if you're going to follow along with my remarks, that'll be the order. I'm sorry we got that wrong on the Xerox machine this morning.
There'll be a test at the end.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, first, a historical perspective and some background information on the issue may help to crystallize the issue for the committee and the people who are listening. In 1956, the United States Congress passed the Alaska Mental Health Enabling Act, which transferred the fiscal and functional responsibility for activities in the field of mental health from the federal government to the territory of Alaska. To ensure that the territory had adequate financial resources to discharge these responsibilities in the mental health field, the Congress granted Alaska 1 million acres of federal lands. These lands are located in the interior, south, central, and southeastern Alaska. They are indicated on the map on the side here, highlighted in yellow, in the map behind the chairman with the dark blue spots. The Enabling Act passed by Congress said this: all lands granted to the territory under this section, together with the income therefrom and the proceeds from any dispositions thereof, shall be administered by the territory of Alaska as a public trust, and such proceeds and income shall be applied to meet the necessary expenses of the mental health program of Alaska. Such lands, income, and proceeds shall be managed and utilized in such manner as the legislature of Alaska may provide.
Now, the state did not establish and maintain a separate account into which income or proceeds derived from mental health lands were deposited. Then, in 1978, the state redesignated mental health lands as general grant lands and changed the record method of accounting for income from public lands. In 1982, a class action suit was filed by the Alaska Mental Health Association. It filed the suit for all persons who are residents of the state of Alaska and who will require mental health services in the future, which are not available in the state. The Superior Court entered a partial summary judgment in June 1983, which found that the state was not required to invalidate prior legislative action, but was required to compensate the trust for fair market value of the lands in question. A year later, in September 1984, the Superior Court ruled in final summary judgment that, number one, the Alaska Mental Health Enabling Act did establish a public trust for the benefit of the mentally ill in Alaska. Number two, the approximately 1 million acres of land granted to the state was dedicated for the use and benefit of the mentally ill in Alaska. Number three, that chapters 181 and 182 of Alaska Accession Laws in 1978 effectively removed lands from the trust established by the federal act. Number four, invalidation of the state legislation was an improper remedy. And number five, the trust is entitled to be reimbursed by the state of Alaska for the fair market value of the mental health trust lands. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, let me repeat the last provision of this Superior Court ruling. The trust is entitled to be reimbursed by the state of Alaska for the fair market value of the mental health trust lands. The question we have to ask is, what does this mean to the state of Alaska? Well, what this means to the state is that we are facing a potential liability of immense proportions. Several estimates of reimbursement have ranged upwards of $5 billion. Unlike other states which receive mental health lands from the federal government by each section number 16 and 32 in every township, Alaska was able to select whatever million acres it wanted in whatever part of the state it wanted, and it did in fact select prime lands. Now, this estimate of $5 billion, to the best I've been able to ascertain, is the second largest potential liability faced by the state of Alaska. The first largest is the corporate income tax litigation between the oil companies and the state. If we were a private company, we'd have to disclose this liability on our financial statements. We'd have to set up a reserve account. But because we're a state government, it's just an undisclosed, unfunded liability. But being the responsible people that we are in public service, I think we have to be cognizant of that, let the people know, and try to minimize that liability. Accordingly, the state, as I said, selected prime real estate in most of the major population areas of the state. No mountaintops or barren tundra was selected. Examples of the lands that were selected and are now subject to fair market appraisal for reimbursement to the trust include valuable acreage in the Swanson River oil and gas field, the Beluga coal field, the Trans-Alaska Gas Pipeline System Project, the Kootenai Water Project, and the Kachemak Bay State Park. Additionally, other mental health lands have already been conveyed to municipalities in fulfillment of their entitlement program. You can look at the map we have on the wall again to see exactly where these impacted areas are located. Now, if a negotiated settlement is not reached between the parties of the suit, it is possible that the court will mandate a settlement. If this occurs, the state may be required to establish a mental health trust account and deposit a specific amount of money to be maintained as a trust fund exclusively for mental health purposes. It could be the equivalent of transferring the amount in the Alaska Permanent Fund, which is about $6 billion now, to a mental health trust fund account. It's a possibility. I'm not saying that that would come to pass. There are many who believe it is a distinct possibility due to the dismal performance of the state of Alaska in funding mental health programs. Although there is no clear definition of just what constitutes a mental health program, the Department of Health and Social Services budget for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, the community mental health centers, and all administrative services total only just over $22 million in this fiscal year. And according to the testimony of the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Alaska is serving only a third of the people with mental health needs. A study by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in 1983 found that Alaska ranks last, dead last, among the 50 states in a number of mental health service areas. Not only is our state the poorest in the nation in funding mental health programs, but we spend less than one-half as much as the next poorest state, and less than one-sixth of the national average. Alaska has such a poor track record in funding mental health programs that if the court steps in to establish a trust fund settlement, Alaska may be required to substantially increase these program funds, as well as transfer billions of dollars into a special trust account. This bill would prevent the state from making a bad situation worse by stopping the disposition of any more of these trust lands. The background files on this issue are voluminous. Attached to my remarks here are just a few summary papers prepared by parties with different viewpoints, some prepared by DNR, some prepared by the Mental Health Association. I think they are a good chronological synopsis of the issues, and I would recommend that you try to read them. One last comment. Representative Gruenberg and myself have been active in promoting an out-of-court settlement on this issue. The governor and the attorney general have been very cooperative in assisting us to accomplish this. As a matter of public policy, we just think that the risk is too high and really commands that we try to do something in the way of an out-of-court settlement. We think the settlement will probably be directed toward future programs, a future way of funding mental health programs that will not require a large cash payment to the plaintiffs up front. And that is certainly better than depleting the permanent fund or having to pledge some other future revenues at this point in time. Now, this bill will make the Department of Natural Resources uncomfortable because there's a lot of land title transfers in the pipeline that are mental health trust lands, and the department is going to, I'm sure, testify that it'll be very inconvenient to saddle some of these some of these projects with this bill. High center some of these projects with this bill. But my answer to that is that I think the department needs all of the stimulation that we can give it to come up with a settlement, and I'd like to see the committee proceed with the bill. I'm sure Representative Gruenberg has some additional comments on this matter.
Okay. If I may, this time I'm going to ask the committee to hold their questions. We do have several teleconference sites on, and I would like to allow Representative Gruenberg to... if we could start limiting our time, though, maybe to a couple of minutes. Because
Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to hold my comments until you've heard from the people who come from around the state. I'd like to hear their comments before spouting off myself.
Okay. And I also have a request here from Representative Dahl, and he would like to say a few words on the legislation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very, very brief to provide time. Excuse me, this is Representative Gall, Peter Gall, representing District 2. I just would like to support the statement that's been made by the sponsor of the bill. The mental health lands are a very valuable component for our system in the state. It is a fact that our per capita expenditures on mental health are very low, and this is a problem, and we have to look to address that problem. One of the devices which, as you all know, the federal government put in place, hoping to do so, was this mental health bank of land, if you will, this trust. We've had situations not only with disposal, but also with the management of the resources on the mental health lands that I think should be brought to the attention of the committee. One specific instance to strike as close to home for me as possible is the Haines State Forest, which it turns out there's a timber sale on there called SE205 is the number. It's the long-term timber sale in Haines. And it's regrettable that the timber sale has taken place almost, actually, to my knowledge, 100% on mental health lands. And it's equally regrettable that it's been a deficit sale, that just the stumpage against the purchaser credits is showing a deficit of several hundred thousand dollars. This kind of a circumstance where the lands are blended into the state's land bank and then operated at a deficit, combined with the low funding for mental health, just exacerbates the problem, makes it more visible and more problematic. And I'd like to encourage the committee to take whatever steps it can in the context of the present way lands are managed to assure the public that when lands are being managed by DNR, when those lands are mental health lands, that they be managed at a profit to the state and in a manner responsible responsive to the original intent of that land grant. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gall.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to find out here in the audience in Juneau, how many people are from out of town that would not be able to come back and testify at a later date? Is there anyone in here? Okay, good. Then we'll go ahead and move on to the first teleconference site, which is Anchorage.
This is the moderator in Anchorage, and Jim Gustin is now ready to offer testimony.
If I may, please, I'd like to ask that we try to limit the to about two to, you know, try not to go over 2 minutes or so on testimony. If you would, please. Did we lose Anchorage?
This is Jim Gottstein. I'm the attorney who's currently representing the Alaska Mental Health Association, Mary C. Nanawak, John Martin, on behalf of themselves and all others similarly situated in the current lawsuit in state court. Your presentation this morning was so good that I think I ought to just leave well enough alone and let other people testify. And I'll do that at this point unless there are any questions.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representing Sun, go ahead.
Yeah, just some notes floating around here, Jim, and this really hasn't very much to do with the suit. I'm kind of in favor of the whole action, but there is some interest as to what the attorney fee arrangement is on this lawsuit.
Well, I've been trying to recruit attorneys to help me out, and I've got four now, I believe, and more on the way, hopefully, unless we don't need it. The arrangement is that I've made with every attorney who's working with me is that we'll set a market rate of about $125 an hour, and the public interest rate of about $75 an hour, and the attorney, and then we'll split on that ratio with the increment above $75 an hour going to the ACFRG Justice Project. Now, ACFRG is the Alaska Public Interest Research Group to pursue other public interest legal matters.
Okay, thank you, Jim. If we could go to the next person in Anchorage.
My name is Glade Birch, and I am the executive director of South Central Counseling Center, the community mental health center in the area. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I am testifying in support of Bill 128. I think it is very proper that the legislature act in this matter. We're speaking of a trust which was set up, placing the responsibility on the legislature. It was a legislative act which originally converted this land, and the Assistant Attorney General has stated that he has a duty to enforce the previous statute which was passed by the legislature. I further think that it is prudent for the legislature to act, first, because it shows good faith. If the state does intend to settle the action as they have stated, they should certainly stop converting the corpus of the trust. Secondly, the court has upheld this trust. There will be an accounting for it. And where will the money come from if more of this land is converted? From what I have heard, the legislature is struggling to find land, not trying to place itself in a position of coming up with $2.5 or $3 billion additional dollars to replace land which could be conveyed in the future. Mental health needs are not being met in Alaska. So the trust is not being honored. By any measure you wish to choose, Alaska has one of the highest levels of distress in the nation. Violence, suicide, child abuse, spousal abuse, name your measure, we have one of the highest levels of distress. And yet our funding is at the lowest level. We are the last in inpatient beds per capita. We're the 50th. They rated 50 states in the District of Columbia. We are the 50th state in admissions per capita to inpatient beds. While we rate as 39th out of all of the states and expenditures per capita, this does not take into account the tremendous cost of delivery of service for mental health in Alaska. And if this adjustment and that was not sufficient funding. In FY84, that $2,259,000 had shrunk to $1,436,000, and we were serving 4,570 people. We took a $600,000 loss in order to do that in FY84. Obviously, we could not continue that in FY85. We did get $1,600,000 as compared to that $2,200,000 back in FY82 this year. But we had to cut the number of people we were seeing from 4,500 to 3,700, and we should have been serving about 5,000 people because of the increase in population. Now, we are serving less than half of the people. These are statistics and don't sound good. Look at our suicide rate. In 1 week, we had 23 serious suicide attempts requiring hospitalization or treatment, and of those, 5 were successful just in the Anchorage area. The child abuse rate, which the legislature is courageously addressing this time, also requires further mental health counseling. It doesn't do any good to identify a child who has been abused and then do nothing for that child. Again, in interest of time, I'll stop, but I do urge you to support this bill, because by doing so, you will bring the pressure necessary to bear on the state to stop incurring that tremendous potential liability of the land that they are conveying away. It will force a settlement, and then perhaps we can address these mental health needs, which we so terribly need to do. Thank you.
Okay, this is Dick Schultz in Juneau. Would appreciate it if the people would try to keep their testimony in approximately 2 minutes. We do have other people to testify, and if you take more time, it's just going to not allow these other people to be able to say what they have on their mind. And we will be leaving this meeting in 15 minutes. So at this time, we'll go to the next person in Anchorage.
Thank you. This is Natalie Gottstein, the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Association. In the interest of time, I will relinquish my testimony to others, simply because those who have spoken before me have done an excellent job. I do have additional things to say, which I will get down on paper and get down to all of you in Juneau. Thank you very much.
And I might add also, this is Dick Schultz, that if anyone does not have the opportunity to testify and they would like to write in, we will submit any letters that we get. We will submit that for the record as far as testimony is concerned.
My name is Lola Reed. I'm president of the Anchorage Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And as Ann DiNardo, who is president of our state group, is going to speak, I will relinquish my time to her. This is Ann DiNardo up in Fairbanks. Were there other people in Anchorage who were going to testify?
We had 4 people in Anchorage, is all I know of.
No, that is all.
Yes, this is Ann DiNardo, and I'm speaking as president of the Alaska Alliance for the Mentally Ill. This is a new group formed of parents and families of the chronically mentally ill in Alaska. That was such an eloquent speech that Dick Schultz gave, and Glade Burge filled us all in on facts and figures, that in the interest of time, I'll simply urge passage of House Bill 128. It's incredible to me, in fact, that the state would continue to sell off any of these mental health plans. Locally, we had an incident over the weekend. And I'll just report you that the mortality rate of the chronically mentally ill is much higher than anyone is aware of. Too often the deaths and suicides are swept aside as an, oh, well, you know, he was ill anyway. And this happened here in Fairbanks, and it really hit home. Excuse me, I think I'll have to relinquish my time now. Al Aaron would like to speak.
All correct.
I just wanted to say that the loss of one of our children that we suffered was directly attributable to lack of proper facilities in the state.
Thank you. For the record, the person that did the testifying was Representative Penn Yalberry, the sponsor of the bill. I would like to be as eloquent a speaker as he is, but You did a fine job. We'll go now to Tok. We won't go to Tok.
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. I'd like to check once again. Tok teleconference, are you online?
Ketchikan, are they online at this time?
Kelly, the bridge, this is Carly, do you know?
Yes, Carly, will be just one moment, and Ketchikan will be testifying.
Thank you, Carly.
One more bit of information, Carla. Were you hailing on Tok for the Dr. Grath to identify himself once again?
Yes, I was. Can you tell me what's the only matter?
Someone else in Ketchikan there to testify.
Yes, this is Margaret Nugent. I'm coordinator of the Community Support Services for Southeast Alaska. I'm also here with my two case managers, Jane Pringle and Michael Standridge. I can only say to the group assembled that 1 in 20 people now suffer from schizophrenia, a major disability. 1 in 5 people in the United States, and this is national statistics, suffer from some form of mental illness. I will agree with one of the former speakers that we seem to have an inordinate amount of people suffering from some form of mental illness in Alaska. I don't like to keep working in a situation where I know that people can be helped, and I simply don't have the hospital space. We don't have it down here. We don't have the monies available to adequately take care of it. We know what has to be done. We're facing the same old budget crunch that goes on everywhere. The cost to this state is more enormous than you can ever imagine when you take into consideration the fact that no one puts a dollar value on human life. Once it is gone, it's not replaceable. I do urge the support of House Bill 128 for very serious reasons, not because it's in a class action suit, I've been through those, but for the real intense personal need that is now presenting everyone who lives in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
That's all the speakers from Ketchikan.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Is Toke still online? Do they have anyone to testify?
My check is Kotzebue.
Oh, that's right. We'll go to Kotzebue.
This is a moderator here in Kotzebue. We have a Mr. Bill Gathers. He is participating in the Manila Association building. I don't know if he wants to testify or not.
What do you find out?
Yes, Carla, this is Ken. Yes, we do. If you'll stand by one moment, I'll work with him offline, and he'll be with you within a matter of seconds.
Thank you. And Ken, did we connect with Toke again?
Yes, they're both online with us at this time.
Thank you. I'd like to check with Toke teleconference. Are you listening to me at this time?
It's the first day of spring.
This is Toke speaking. Can you hear me? And I'd like to particularly thank Representative Pinal-Berry both for introducing the legislation and for letting some of us know that the committee hearing would be held today. I realize this is a resource committee hearing and not health and social services, and so while I could testify for hours about mental health needs and the absence of services, I'd just like to say instead that I see the state as being in a severe liability position. The courts certainly agree with that at this point. I have been involved in mental health services here in the state since 1976 and feel very deeply about mental health issues, but I also care about everything else in the state, and I hate to see the state increasing its cash liability position. Additional transfer of lands, it seems very likely, down the road is going to mean an increased cash liability and a possible reduction of services in other areas, and so I would urge the committee to pass out House Bill 128. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is Kotzebue, did they have a person to testify? Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead, Kotzebue.
This is Bill Cathers, mental health director at the Manilik Association mental health office. I just wanted to point out that in particular, rural mental health centers have the difficulty of trying to reach out into distant villages where clients are sometimes located, so that the cost of per capita cost of serving these people is exceptionally high. I certainly would support the passing out of this bill at this time, and thank you very much.
Okay, and thank Thank you. That, I believe, is all the people that we have to testify on the teleconferencing. We'll leave the teleconference open for a while until we find out what the
might have one in Seward.
We have someone in Seward. All right. Let's go to Seward.
This is Dennis Scholl, the program director for the Seward Life Action Council. It's a mental health and alcohol and general human services counseling program. Also president of the Mental Health Association. Just would like to reiterate what Mike Graff just said. That was one of my greater concerns. If the conveyances of the land continue, the state's liability for a cash settlement is going to increase, all the more important to pass the bill. We do see land as a vehicle to make the trust whole once again. Emphasis upon the idea that this was a trust and it hasn't been managed as a trust. The figures that come from the land folks, I think, established real clearly that the land has been frittered away without attention to the needs of the mental health and other human services programs it was to support. Even in small places with access by road to Anchorage, our ability to meet the needs is too low. In the first 8 days of this month, we had 6 different instances where we had to arrange inpatient hospital services for people at the same time that we're busily trying to justify our existence through grants to the department. If you were to just look at the grant requests from the different mental health areas, and I think those are often at least a minimum description of what services are needed for small areas, you'd see that they've never been funded even to meet the need that was identified that way. I know a number of the grants that come from mental health centers were also influenced by, over the years, description of what amount of funds were going to be available. So rather than write grants that identified the amount of funds needed to meet your needs, even those grants were honed down to say, well, that's all we're going to get, let's justify it. Even in Seward, within the past year, we've had an unfortunate suicide because of inadequate facilities for someone who was in the process of an involuntary commitment in accordance with Alaska statutes. I think the one other thing to be mindful of, especially with the increased organization for the Alliance for the Mentally Ill groups in the state, is that over the years, those suffering from mental illness in many ways were disenfranchised, maybe not effective in representing their needs through the ballot box. I think with the organization for these other support groups, that the impact or the demand for services for the mentally ill will be seen all the more. And I urge passage of the HB 128. Thanks for letting me speak.
Okay, thank you. I believe that's all the people that we have on the teleconference site this time to testify. The pleasure of the committee. We are out of time. In fact, we're 5 minutes over our adjournment time. And we have lots of people that here in Juneau that have not had an opportunity to testify. We'll hold it over.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would note that I sit on the Judiciary Committee also, and if you want to see any action on this bill, we're booked through April 9th right now. That if you want to see this bill move, I would suggest that we move the bill now, unless anybody has any strong objection or amendments.
Representative Thompson.
I do have one question, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address it to Mr. Arnold from DNR. According to the information, they were, by March 15th, to have come up with an estimate of the fair market value of the land. I'd like to know what that appraisal is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Bob Arnold, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. The evaluation of the lands was completed and furnished the court, but at the time it was, I understood it was confidential. As a transmission to the court, and perhaps I can ask the Department of Law whether that is true.
Yes, Doug, if you want to join up here at the table, because there may be some questions that the committee wants to ask specifically of you.
I am not the attorney who's actually handling the litigation. That's Tom.
Would you give your name for the record?
I'm Douglas Mertz, Assistant Attorney General. Okay. And I'm not familiar with all the details of the agreement, but I understood that there was an understanding about coming up with the final figures before they were released. I don't know any more details of that.
Mr. Chairman, let me, the question is a wholly appropriate one and has a bearing on what the committee is doing. Let me ascertain for sure about that communication to the court, and if there is no reason that it cannot be.
Excuse me, this is the moderator in Fairbanks. We were unable to hear the entire last transaction. It was breaking up so badly.
Let me determine for this committee whether that figure can be furnished here, and if it can, I'll promptly do so. But this time, I have only the last conversation I had with Mr. Custer of the Attorney General's office, and I did understand it to be a private communication this time. Let me find that out properly and then advise the committee.
If I may, I just, do you have any problem with the legislation the way it's written, and any problem with this legislation becoming law?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do. I would like to say, first of all, I appreciate the expressions of concern we've heard from around the state about the need for mental health services and the level of services that have been available. I can readily identify as personally with those expressions of concern. I would like to point out, however, that the Department of Natural Resources is managing the mental health lands consistent with the 1978 legislation adopted by this legislature and signed by the legislature and signed into law. And this legislation was not invalidated by the court. So it's not a matter of discretion for the Department of Natural Resources to go back to the 1956 Enabling Act. We are unfree to do so. In other words, we must act consistent with laws adopted by the state. I likewise support and respect the motives of the sponsors of the legislation before you. But in our view, HB 2128 will work mischief in a number of projects which the private sector and public agencies have proposed. Both businesses and individuals would be handicapped in obtaining the rights to land which they are seeking on the basis of the 1978 legislation. Let me give a few illustrations. During the last session, the effect of the legislation is to bar the transfer of land from the state's estate. Secondly, to bar disposals of land. Though the language of the law itself does not define disposals, our regulations make plain that disposals of land include the transfer of any rights or interest in the land, so it would be a right-of-way, a permit of another kind. Using the first illustration with regard to the conveyance of land, let me say, the last session of the legislature adopted a bill which allows us to quitclaim land to Alaska Natives whose allotments were wrongfully conveyed to the state of Alaska. We now have that authority, but many of these allotments, indeed perhaps most of them in the Haines area, are on mental health lands. And if HB 128 is enacted, we would be unable to transfer that land back to the federal government so that it can go to the native allottees who are rightfully entitled to it. Secondly, in the Anchorage area, we have discussions with regard to an Eagle River bridge. That bridge and its approaches would cross mental health lands, and if HB 128 is enacted, it would not be possible for us to issue those rights and interests to allow that construction to move ahead. The natural gas pipeline NSTAR in the Anchorage area likewise is seeking to extend its services, and to the in those instances in which the gas pipeline would cross mental health lands, we would be unable to transfer, to grant that right-of-way for the purposes that has described.
Okay. Pardon me. If I may, we're going to have to cut here, and we're going to have to go off the floor session. I just wanted to ask Representative Sund. Representative Sund, can the judiciary address the concerns that were brought forth by Mr. Arnold?
Mr. Chairman, the Judiciary Committee can address any of the matters that are being brought up here. It's the question of whether this committee wants to continue to keep the bill in its possession and work on those issues or pass it on.
I would like to find out what is the pleasure of the committee at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I know that we're under, pressure to move all these bills out of committee, but in light of what Mr. Arnold just said about, the native allotments in the Haines area, that's been a ongoing problem for some time now. And the people were promised that those allotments were to be turned over to them, turned back to the federal government so that they in turn could be turned over to the people there. And it's been going on since 1982. It's now 1985. And if what he says is true about, most of these allotments on mental health plans, and if this bill goes through, then there's no, the allotments can't be turned over. Can I ask Mr. Otto a question?
Yes.
If this land that's turned over to the federal government, it's no longer state land, so does that prohibit them from getting the land if this bill is passed?
In the specific case, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman, in the specific case you cite, the land is now state land transferred under the Mental Health Act, and we would be unable to transfer any interest in those lands if HB 128 should be enacted. But the cases, I can cite perhaps a dozen cases of other kinds, our land program and others. Mr. Chairman, I know your time is short. Let me say I would be happy to communicate with the committee in a letter the problems with the legislation from our viewpoint.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, in light of the time, I would make the specific request that DNR provide this committee with the information that was called for by the courts by March 15th, and that is, what is the fair market value of all the land and state ownership as of the 1978 redesignation? And I want that information post-haste. And if we don't have it, I want to know why they don't have it.
I understand, Mr. Chairman.
What is the pleasure of the committee on this piece of legislation at this time? Representative
Harper. I believe, you know, in light of the time that we have, that, you know, there, I don't have any problem with moving it out, but I'm going to follow it through the process, you know, myself. So, I have no problem.
Is there a motion before the committee to move it out?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move that House Bill 128 out of committee with individual recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved that we pass House Bill, let me get the number here, 128 from the Resource Committee with individual recommendations. Any objections? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to object to that motion, and I will agree to move it out of committee. However, I want to comment that this, I'm very frustrated by this because I see it as another situation that the state has managed to get horribly muddled, and the potential for it being further muddled by lawyers and the like is very great. And I am favorably disposed to this legislation. It's very apparent to me that this needs to be taken care of. But on the other hand, we're not provided with adequate information to make an honest judgment in this committee, and that greatly troubles me. But I will not object to it moving out of committee.
Well, I believe that we have been afforded a lot of information on the mental health trust lands over the years and in the past, and we've each got examples that we can go back to in our districts, and plus the fact that I believe that the testimony that came forth from Representative Pignalberry pretty well spelled out specifically the concerns that we may have as far as the Resource Committee is concerned. And at this time, if there are technical things that need to be addressed, they can be addressed in Judiciary Committee. You still maintain your objection?
I remove my objections, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The House Bill 123 is moved from Resources with individual recommendations, or 128, I'm sorry, 128. And with that, the House Resources is adjourned.